For that answer, let's turn to the history books.
Back in the 80s, when Madagascar was just turning away from the then Soviet Union, when we first started there, the poverty was just crushing, and they were beginning to rely on Western nations to give aid to help the country.
The numerous Western nations that came to Madagascar's aid in the 80s were drawn to Madagascar not merely due to the rampant poverty, but the biodiversity. The presence of so many rare species of plant and animal, primarily the lemurs, presented many organizations with a choice: helping the population or studying a new exotic species. Which do you think they chose?
Why you conserve lemurs but not conserve us? Because most of them, that's they don't see the indirect importance of the lemurs.
But it's hard to pay attention to the indirect impacts that lemur endangerment has on your life when your own existence, and that of your family, is threatened by hunger and poverty. So naturally, many Malagasy were resentful towards resource-laden Western nations for prioritizing lemurs over people, and nobody saw this clearer than Charlie.
And I can remember even seeing cartoon caricatures in the Malagasy newspapers of foreigners coming over with a little WWF logo on the cartoon, and the guy helping lemurs, and while the guy in rags, is starving and has nothing to eat, so.
But you can't blame the conservation organizations of the 80s either. After all, they were focused on mitigating an important existential risk, a much more pressing version of which we're still grappling with today. They were also focused on advancing science by studying an under-researched keystone species. We can, however, problematize the goals of the Western nations backing some of these organizations. Tasked with providing aid to struggling nations in the wake of the power vacuum left by the collapse of the Soviet Union, these nations played the role of mad doctor. They happily exposed Madagascar to the microscope of science, but withheld the medicine its people needed. And keep in mind that these are the same nations responsible for the brunt of the climate crisis due to their carbon emissions. They were, in effect, marveling at the victims of a problem they themselves had created. So, when analyzing the intersection of lemurs and Malagasy attitudes and culture, we need to be careful. Systemic issues perpetuated by a lack of attention from Western nations lie at the core of lemur hunting today, and are part of the reason why Malagasy culture isn't more unified in opposition to such practices. The good thing about culture, though, is that it's malleable. As we'll discuss in the next section, conservation attitudes today have changed a lot since the 80s, and with a rise in external support, Madagascar is coming to embrace its lemur population.
That's happening over time as people realize how unique these endemic lemur species are to Madagascar. Now there's a certain pride about lemurs being only from Madagascar that didn't exist when we started in the 80s because most people just didn't realize that was the case. Come on, let's go.
Recognize this theme song? A lot of 2000s kids would. It's from Zaboomafoo, a children's show centered around introducing kids to different animal species. It features the namesake talking lemur, who's played in the opening sequence by Jovian, a cockerel shifaka from the Duke Lemur Center. Though Jovian himself passed away a couple years ago, his fellow species members can still be spotted free-ranging in the Lemur Center's natural habitats, leaping between trees and munching on leaves. Zaboomafoo may be the best-known example of the Duke Lemur Center's public footprint, but it's just a small relic of the center's education and conservation efforts, which have been going on since its inception in the 70s. So, having painted a picture of the climate crisis in Madagascar, its effect on lemurs, and the native population's relationship with the rest of their ecosystem. We can turn to some of the solutions being developed in our own backyard here at Duke. As we begin this foray, one thing remains for certain.
You don't have to convince cultivators that the climate is changing. They're the ones on the land, and they're seeing it. They're seeing the rains change, when the rains come, how often or how much comes at certain times of year. So the farmers are seeing it, and they are the witnesses.
It seems intuitive, then, that the Malagasy farmers at the center of the climate crisis should be an integral part of the solution. But this hasn't always been the case. I ended the last section with the claim that conservation attitudes in Madagascar have changed over the past four decades. No one can speak to this shift better than Charlie, who's been doing this work since the 80s.
The old style of conservation was really what we term fortress conservation, trying to protect what's left in a more build a fence around it, put guards around that forest. Over the decades, the conservation community has come to realize that that's just not sustainable. You just make enemies of the people when people are part of the environment and people are often involved in forested areas and need those forested areas to survive in many cases. So multifaceted, community-based conservation approach has become the much more effective and sustainable way to address conservation.
The shift from fortress to community conservation has been quite visible. In the 90s, the Duke Lemur Center piloted a program to reintroduce a colony of ruffed lemurs raised here in the United States back into their natural habitats in Madagascar. This is the same species of lemur that we heard on tape at the very beginning. Charlie was at the helm of the project, which took years of planning and preparation to carry out. While the project was mostly successful and yielded a plethora of valuable findings and insights, it was blisteringly complex and in some cases even risky to carry out.
It took a while to determine which individuals from the captive population were most appropriate to reintroduce. And we had to do very careful health screenings of all the individuals to be sure we weren't introducing any diseases into the wild, which could have been catastrophic for all lemur populations in Madagascar. I can't overemphasize the complexity of the project if you want to do it correctly. I should also say it's expensive. It's not cheap, you know, to cover all your bases and to do it the way that it should be done.
It stands to reason, then, that the DLC and other conservation organizations have shifted course. Since it's the Malagasy people who see, experience, and contribute to the effects of the climate crisis, today's efforts focus on community collaboration. The Lemur Center has focused, for instance, on replanting native trees to rehabilitate deforested landscapes, and does so in consultation with the communities that depend most on the land.
We try to look for the trees that people want that are meeting other needs that they might have. So that, you know, eucalyptus and pine are great because they're fast growing and they can be used for timber and for charcoal. But there's a lot of native species that people rely on, and we're doing the research about it. We're getting people's feedback, and then we're stocking tree nurseries with these valuable trees that people want. Not only native trees, but also cash crop trees. So things like cloves, cacao, coffee. These are trees that can produce a very lucrative crop that, you know, can help lift people out of poverty.
By factoring in community input, the Duke Lemur Center is able to ensure that the solutions they implement get at the root of some of these systemic issues, such as hunger and poverty, that push people to engage in ecosystem-threatening actions, like lemur hunting or harmful cultivation. Other conservation paradigms focus on adaptation. As the rainy seasons have gotten shorter, it's become harder for farmers to turn out successful crops, particularly in the drier seasons. To help the farmers adapt, the DLC focuses on teaching climate-smart agriculture techniques, diversifying the types of crops that farmers can cultivate.
You know, for example, if you've got only one crop, your rice, and it fails, you're stuck with nothing. But if you've got rice and beans and corn and cassava and fruit trees, you've got a little bit more of a buffer. We say you're more resilient to climate change, to volatility in the markets, things like that.
In some parts of the country, the landscape makes it possible to capture water during the rainy season, such that it can be used later when the climate gets drier.
So what we try to do is create these canals on the contour of the mountain, such that when the rain falls, it'll hit these canals, spread out through the canals, and have an opportunity to just sink down into the subsoil, as opposed to running straight off the topsoil.
Without question, community-based solutions, by focusing directly on solutions that actively help Malagasy farmers, make better use of resources than the old style of fortress conservation, while also doing their part to help the people. Ecosystems are interconnected, and helping the people within them is the best way to help the rest of the ecosystem as well. That said, however, there's still a glaring need for systemic support. That's why many conservation groups today focus simply on furnishing farming communities with a quota of rice or income to help keep them afloat as they implement these principles. Just as in the 80s, lemurs and their natural habitats are the priority, but now, so are the Malagasy people.
What is the methodology that we can help people so that they can get food? Because as we know that the climate change is already here, is already there. So how to adapt this? This is the problem also for the people.
There are other examples of conservation efforts that target not just the environment, but the people that live on it.
For example, also we support family planning, support women's reproductive health. Obvious advantages to that in terms of conservation are that it keeps population levels at a place that's less pressure on the remaining forest. And the women are really interested in having fewer children, giving contraceptive choices, reproductive choices to women.
And as crucial as organizations like the Duke Lemur Center have been at helping Madagascar tackle the effects of its climate crisis, the pivot to community partnerships has allowed for more endemic organizations to also join the fight.
Something that we've seen change dramatically is the level of Malagasy that are involved in environmental issues now, and environmental NGOs that are Malagasy-based, they're Malagasy nationals. That just didn't exist in the 80s at all. And in the end, I think that's what's going to really make a huge difference in the path that Madagascar follows in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I always laugh because, you know, in America, where we have all the access to the best information in the world, you still have these climate skeptics. And in Madagascar, you can talk with farmers that, you know, not to say anything bad about their education, but, you know, they didn't even get to go to primary school in many cases. And they know adamantly that the climate is changing because they witness it every day, every year. They're living off the land in a sense that, you know, like I was saying with their farming, their farming is timed to when those rains start. So they have known since they were very young, okay, and, you know, mid-November to December, that's when the rains are going to come. And they watched it every year being pushed back further and further and further.
Perhaps there's no better place to conclude than thinking about some learning lessons. After all, as we've seen, the Western world has taken a lot from Madagascar's natural habitat without giving a lot back. So what can we learn from the Malagasy and the lemurs? Let's start with lesson one.
Part of our environmental education program here in Madagascar is to really try to emphasize the ecosystem services kind of model and way of thinking, such that, you know, again, it's not just about preserving the forest for the lemurs, it's about preserving the entire landscape for biodiversity as well as for people.
We first started this journey talking about how all the species of an ecosystem are interconnected, and about how the downfall of one accompanies the loss of many others. Thus, the climate crisis can never just be about humans, or by the same token, just about lemurs or their economic impact. We all face the same fate if shrinking forests deplete global oxygen levels, or if lemurs and other seed dispersal species no longer exist to help the forests regrow. Conservation, in other words, is a cross-species team effort, and one that we should prioritize not for external or economic reasons, but simply for the greater good.
The cost of climate change is going to far, far, far outweigh anything that we, any investments that we make to mitigate it.
There's lesson two. To the extent that the climate conversation in America remains a debate, as opposed to a single truth, let's at least be honest about how much we ought to be investing. In Madagascar, a nation that's barely responsible for a fraction of carbon emissions, conservation organizations are working tirelessly on community collaborations for more sustainable growing practices. Meanwhile, in the United States, which has been pumping carbon into the air over the better part of a century, we're unable to justify far more impactful investments over cost concerns. If the Malagasy can do it, so should we.
But, you know, we need to also offer hard evidence of change as well. You know, we need to show convincing proof to the non-believers that it is changing.
And lastly, if the impact of the climate crisis is invisible to us through changing rainy seasons, rising sea levels, or even dying lemurs, let's keep it visible in the only way we can, through evidence. By leveraging both our immense capacity to research the climate crisis and communicate our findings to a wide audience, we may just yet be able to remind people that our environment is actively under threat.
And that we need to work together. Not just with our fellow community members, but with our fellow species, in order to make a difference.